Florida. I'm actually up here working for the New York Times to do their PCI compliance, but IPv6 is more of a hobby for me than anything else. Kind of keeps the brain going. So, on we go. Quick IPv6 history here. 1992, they're already starting to see that there's going to be a shortage of V4 IP addresses. Also, they're starting to realize that there's a lot of technical disadvantages to IPv4. So in 93, they put out a request for comments for a new protocol. 1995, IPv6 is chosen as the next generation internet protocol. Some comparisons here, and I'm sorry if I'm like, you know, talking to the low end of the crowd here, but
talk to me.
So I'm starting at the basics, and believe me, we'll get technical towards the end of it. V4, 32-bit address space, possible 4.3 billion IPs. That's not counting reserved addresses, the RFC 1918 addresses, localhost. V6 has 128-bit address space, 3.4 times 10 to the 38th power, or 340 undecillion addresses, equates out to 64 billion IP addresses for every square centimeter on Earth. I'm hoping so, or I'm hoping I'll be dead by the time they need more than that. I won't have to worry about it. Sorry?
Does that include the ocean?
I believe so. Routing tables. Routing tables have become a monstrous headache for backbone providers. As of 2003, and that's the latest data I could get, there were 113,000 routes in the default free zone. I'm pretty sure. What's that?
227. 227,000
now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's about doubled in the last 4 years. With IPv6's hierarchical routing system, the most you'll have in the default free zone is 8192.
Can you explain what the default free zone is?
Maybe you'd be better at this.
What?
Default free zone.
Yes. It's basically where you don't need a default route to get to the next hop, I'm pretty sure. Unfortunately, I'm not like a backbone guy. I mean, usually I get a T1 and, you know, okay, those are your IPs, that's your gateway, set it up and go. One of the nice things about V6, goodbye NAT. Now, IPv6 reestablishes end-to-end connectivity. So you don't have any more kludges that you know, you got to do port forwarding or UPnP to get VoIP or P2P working properly. What people tend to forget or never learn is that NAT is not a security mechanism. It was a band-aid for a shortage of V4 addresses. The original design...
Why?
Sorry?
Can you explain why NAT is not a security mechanism?
Well, I mean, first of all, how many attacks are punching through that NAT server anyway? Because, you know, Johnny Sixpack double-clicked on a virus, okay, now that computer is phoning home going out that NAT server. I mean, what's the difference between that and a public IP? Nothing.
Well, it doesn't filter ports, right?
Right.
So the ports are the issue. Look, I've had the argument many, many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
Clients, for instance, and technical people. And the reality is that, I mean, yeah, once you're coming out, right, most of the vulnerabilities aren't on basic port scans coming, right?
Right.
Which aren't going to be allowed back in. It's actually people going out and what's happening there. But, I mean, I know, so I just want you to articulate your view of the argument.
Well, I mean, honestly, what exactly would be the difference between me having a V4 router that acted as a proper firewall doing egress and ingress filtering, okay, with public IPs on the back or private IPs on the back? Is there a difference?
No.
Security by obscurity, which is not security.
Exactly. Going back to the slide, the original design of the internet was supposed to be end-to-end communications. What V6 is going to enable is us to be able to do that again. Actually, going back to George's question here, but how do I secure my network without Mac? Well, I just said, you know, egress, ingress, filtering. Firewalls still work in V6. The one thing we are going to have to tackle is new strategies for IDS and IPS systems. And on top of that, we've got another little problem that involves crypto. IPv6 is part of the, or IPsec is part of the IPv6 protocol. It was bolted on into IPv4, and there's, if anybody has worked on VPNs, you'll know there really isn't a standard one. So one of the good things about V6 is also one of the banes of it, is if all hosts are going to be using IPsec end-to-end, how do you check your network for malicious traffic? There's been a few solutions that have been kicking around the North American IPv6 Task Force and the IPv6 Forum, where you have a server or you actually have the firewall itself send out signatures over another encrypted channel, and the client actually scans itself. So that way the traffic becomes unencrypted, it automatically goes through this filtering system, and then goes to the processor. Similar to enterprise antivirus solutions.
I'm sorry to interrupt. As I said before the meeting, if anybody else wants anything to drink or to eat right now, forever hold the peace, just go find out
the on top of that, if anybody has any questions at any point, by all means, stop me. I'll be more than happy to answer it. If it takes too long, I may have to catch you after the meeting, but by all means, feel free to interrupt me. So the other possible solution would be use null encryption, so you're actually still able to sniff your network traffic. That still allows for non-repudiation. So at least you know where the traffic's coming from. It's just your firewall can actually see it and inspect it. Going back to another thing that George's introduction included was the chicken and the egg problem. Nobody uses IPv6 because there's very few applications for it. Well, there's few applications because nobody's using it. The fix, a major entity decides, okay, we need it. Well, enter the U.S. Department of Defense. They want to be completely shifted over to V6 by 2010. It's probably not going to happen, but it's a good time to learn the protocol. Because on top of that, you also get the domino effect. The Department of Defense implements V6. Now the DoD's contractors have to implement V6. Now their suppliers have to implement V6, et cetera, ad nauseum.
Can you tell how far along the DoD is in the implementation?
Lockheed just put up a test network.
Can you repeat the question?
The question was, do I have any idea how far along the DoD is? My response to that was, I know for a fact that Lockheed just put up a test network. The DoD is still kicking it around. They have a bunch of test networks already up. But being that it's all test networks, that's why I say it's probably not going to happen by 2010. But it'll be a good thing to know, especially if you're a defense contractor. So why does the DoD want IPv6? Well, ad hoc networks with automatic crypto. You get multiple routable IPs for personnel, for mines, for vehicles. Imagine thousands of sensors in a soldier's uniform, and he gets shot in the leg. And then we've got another soldier who gets shot fairly close to the heart. Well, with all the sensors in the uniform, they're going to know that the leg wound is less of a triage problem than the shot to the chest. So they're going to send in the rescue people to the guy with the chest wound first. But enough with the whys. It's time for the hows. In this setup, I used a OpenBSD 4.1 virtual machine. FreeBSD, NetBSD, Flavor of the Month BSD, they're all going to be similar because they're all based on the Kami IPv6 stack. If you want to check it out yourself, it's at www.kami.net. The project was started in 98. It was completed last year, although the Y project has picked up basically where they left off. So now we'll get into some of the address basics. That top one is an IPv6 address, 128-bit hexadecimal. Uses CIDR for subnetting. ARIN tends to assign /32s for businesses and then /48s to individuals. So the /32 would actually be the 2001 ABCD part, and then the /48 would be another word on top of that. And then a /64, which is half the address, is what you actually use for a standard network. :1, that's localhost, 127.0.0.1 in four terms. And then :, is usually used for configurations to listen on all interfaces or addresses. The first block, the /8, tells the type of the address. 2001 is a globally routable IPv6 IP. FE80 is a link local. The system gets an FE80 on boot. You might have actually seen them in your ifconfigs. Uses multicast query for router advertisers or DHCP v6 server. It's used in lieu of ARP, and duplicate FE80s are taken care of by duplicate address detection.
So does ARP disappear?
Yes.
Altogether?
Yes.
Okay. Or does this have any effect on, I mean, this must be a stupid question, does this have any effect on network hardware, like actually like link layer devices like switches, something like that?
Every link layer device that I've tested with IPv6 had no problems with it. I think where you're going to start seeing issues is the monitoring. But you think about it, those same switches are also doing IPX, they're also doing NetBuoy, you know, so. And then you've got three FFE addresses, which were 6-phone addresses, which were phased out last year. And they're basically saying use the 2001 addresses now. 2002 is used for 6-to-4 tunneling. FEC0 used to be a site local address, similar to RFC 1918. It's been depreciated. And then FFO1, FFO2, and FFO5 are multicast addresses. Excuse me. I didn't really want to get into the details of that here, but if you go to that website, it explains it, again, ad nauseum. But
you're going to have to push the slides later?
Yes.
I don't think anyone can read those links.
Okay.
Yeah. Literally, I can't see it.
Sorry.
It's no problem. It looks better on my screen. But no, I'll make sure George gets a copy of this. And,
we'll post it in the library.
Okay.
Thank you.
But it's mostly used to query for router advertisements or DHCP v6. Router advertising, an IPv6 router is manually assigned its address, just like before. It's usually in a /64. The first four words of the address are known. As clients boot, they make router advertisement requests, and the router responds with, here's my IP address, and here's the first four words of your IP. Then, the client actually takes over and uses a extended unique identifier, which is essentially based on a MAC address. They throw an FFFE in the middle of it, and that's the other side of the IPv6 IP address. Now, you can use privacy extensions so it doesn't involve your MAC address when you request that IPv6 address. So a lot of people up in arms because it was based on the MAC. So putting it all together, we now have a full IPv6 address and a gateway. But what about DNS? Well, router advertising currently does not assign DNS servers. So you either need a DHCP v6 server or wait for the spec to come out for DNS over router advertising.
So all DNS is going to remain IPv4?
No. No, there's plenty of V6 DNS servers out there. I think three of the root servers are V6 enabled. It's just router advertising didn't take into account the fact that you're going to need DNS servers. Engineer oversight, go figure. But again, if you use a DHCP V6 server, you basically have all the options that you had in DHCP V4. Okay, so my goals when I started working on this particular talk were to set up an IPv6 test network, be able to assign 0.0.0.0 to the IPv4 interface, and still be able to access IPv4 sites using 6-to-4 translation. Of course, access IPv6 hosts, and access and setup commonly used daemons used for IPv6. BSD makes it real damn easy. Dual stack capable and installed by default, NTP, SSH, and bind. I do install a couple packages. Postfix I didn't have to, but I became a Postfix convert about 2 years ago, and I'm sick of sendmail. So I do install Apache 2 and Postfix. Setting it up, getting the V6 connectivity. The problem is that there are very few ISPs, especially in the States, only in the States it seems, that actually do V6 IPs to customers. This is slowly changing. NTT Vireo, which is a Japanese company, Verizon is actually starting to work on it. There's a few others. So, at this stage of the game, if you're a hobbyist or you just want to mess around and get a test network up, you're pretty much stuck with tunnel brokers. Hurricane Electric has one. 6x.net, who is based out of Europe, has one. And if you can get it, BGP peering. But that's more of the ISP level stuff, and if you want to talk to me about it after the meeting, it's a little bit beyond the scope of this talk. All right, so getting connected with a tunnel broker usually requires a routable V4 address. Torito can go through firewalls if needed, but there's very few Torito servers available. And what Torito is, it's IPv6 tunneling over UDP. It makes it very easy to get it through firewalls. There are no implementations of Torito for OpenBSD. The only BSD you can get it for is FreeBSD. And it doesn't work with symmetric NATs, so unless you're doing a port forward, if you got a symmetric NAT, it's not going to work. You can also do V6 tunneling over VPN tunnels, but again, the problem is finding a tunnel broker that will give you that VPN connection. Sorry about that, guys. Like I said, we'll post the slides, but this is basically just a rundown of the commands that you use to actually get a tunnel broker working in OpenBSD. FreeBSD, NetBSD, it's very similar. So then, once you get connected, you want to make the thing into a router. You go in and edit your sysctl.conf, set up IPv6 forwarding, and make sure that it's not taking router advertisements. They're mutually exclusive. You can't have one without them. You can't do one and do the other at the same time. Configuring your router advertiser. Tunnel brokers usually also give an address range.
Could you explain that last point? Why are they mutually exclusive? Yeah, that one.
Well, if you're setting up as a V6 router,
you need to have a static address.
Then you have to have a static IP. You can't use router advertising. On top of that, you're usually setting up this box to do router advertising.
Yeah. Okay.
So I can't accept it and do it at the same time. All right. So tunnel brokers usually give an address range. It's usually a /64. Some of them actually give /48s. It's more IP addresses than you're ever going to need.
I've never seen that.
So you configure your second NIC with one of these V6 IPs, start your router advertiser, and then start up your router solicitation daemon on your clients. And then you can actually set it up in your rc.com to make sure that it starts up on boot, and your clients should be able at that point to access external V6 sites. And then check conde.net to test it out. Now, to do the translation, I used FateD and TOTD. The transitioning mechanisms that are based on that, PT, so it's Network Address Translation, Protocol Translation. The TOTD part is a DNS translator. It's in the OpenBSD packages. FateD actually does the protocol translations, and it is built into OpenBSD. It's just a matter of setting the sysctl to make sure that it's on. It's off by default. Fate zero off or added to your boot scripts. FateD by default that is set up to deny all. So you actually have to put an allowed range in there. And then you actually tell FateNetD which protocol you want to use. The problem with FateD is you cannot have a daemon running on that port that you're using to translate. So if you're translating port 80, you can't be running Apache on port 80.
So you can't SSH if you have an SSH daemon?
Switch SSH to another port.
So, yes.
Yeah. And then the only thing you really need for the TOTD config is set up the forwarder to tell it which DNS IPs to forward to, and then run TOTD and it actually does the DNS translation for you. You can also check out the man page or Google for other configs. The proxy server that's in Apache works with IPv6 out of the box, well, once you get the proxy server working, but Squid requires a patch or the latest CVS, and I've included a non-blue link for that particular Squid. SSH tunnels you can actually pull off as a 6-to-4 conversion tool. You just use that little trick. It can actually translate TCP ports. Say you've got a mail server that's V6 only, and then you've got a dual stack machine. You can set up an SSH tunnel, and somebody can hit that mail server on V4 and it'll just pipe it to the V6 machine. The daemon configs were actually pretty simple. I mean, you edit the SSHD config to listen on any IPv6 address, but on OpenBSD, it's enabled by default.
Can you just do listen on all interfaces?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
the quick way, right?
That is the way.
That is the way, but do people specify addresses or just listen on all interfaces?
Well, you can. I mean, with the SSH,
whatever, right?
Yeah, you can tell it only listen on this IP address, only listen on localhost. Of course, you're kind of screwed with that, but you can actually specify IP addresses in here too, just like V4.
Okay.
In Apache 2, not too much different. Edit the http.conf. Tell it to listen on :: on whatever port, or you specify IP addresses again, do virtual hosts. It all pretty much works the same way. The default OpenBSD HTTP Apache server is 1.3, and 1.3 and earlier are not V6 capable, so I had to actually install Apache 2 to get this to work. Stuff I didn't quite cover, not because of meeting time, but because I just finished these slides up like 2 hours ago. Bind configurations are pretty much the same, except that IPv6 uses quad A records instead of regular A records. PF configs are also very similar to V4. It'd be a good idea to block multicast addresses on your outside, and also black site local addresses on the outside.
Isn't that like school?
Sorry?
Blocking the site local address and GPS local address. Isn't that like anti school?
There is a way to block local addresses from spoofing just by setting anti-spoof and PR.
Okay. I'm not sure if any spoof works with E6 or not.
What's the difference between port A and A6 records?
Okay, a standard A record, you know, something A points to www.nicebug.org. Mm-hmm. Well, if Nicebug decided that they wanted to go V6, it would be 2001 the entire V6 address, quad A, www.
No, there is another like record set which called A.
Right, or but they pretty much decided a couple of years ago that they were going to stick with the quad A.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The question was about A6 records as opposed to quad A records. There were two standards for a while. They've depreciated the A6 in favor of the quad A.
Do you believe, just as a not too big a tangent, but any American registrars that actually lets you get, lets you have proper IPv6 addresses and not just the
no registrars at all.
None in America.
That I found. My fix for that, however, I found a. It starts off as a free DNS service, but I'm actually paying the guy $5 a month via PayPal, afraid.org.
Okay.
It's a free DNS service for like up to 10 machines. And then after that, you know,
he does registration, like the register. I mean,
no, he doesn't do it. When I register a domain, I just point that domain to his DNS servers.
Got it. But I mean, are you able to do then full IPv6 addressing?
Yes.
From there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And he's got a really nice web interface going, does reverse.
Got it.
Just, it's a nice setup.
Okay.
For me, it's well worth the $5 a month I pay the guy. And he's running around for DSD.
Yeah. Repeat?
Sorry?
I don't understand. I'm left out back here.
What? Do you have a specific? Okay. What was
the question?
That's
the
question.
DNS.
DNS.
The question was, is there any registrars in the United States that actually do full-blown IPv6 stuff? And my answer to that is not that I've found. What I tend to do, I have a DNS service that I use that's hosted at afraid.org. Who does full IPv6. So when I register a domain, I point it to his DNS servers, and then I've got the full IPv6 capability.
When you're actually registering the domain, I see you're doing it through Verisign or whatever like that, so mm-hmm. when it asks you for like, what your name service,
mm-hmm.
right, how are you, so if I was actually to look it up, right, I'd be doing IPv4 and going to his 4 IP record, so that's part of not understanding. So let's say I have like a full IPv6 connection
okay.
to the internet, and I go to resolve your domain, right?
Uh-huh.
So what I have to do is go to one of the main servers to get the main server.
You could either go to a root server.
Can you repeat that? We need to hear it back here.
Okay. The question was, if I have a V6 only network, do I actually have to go talk to one of the IPv6 capable root servers? To actually resolve anything on the V6 side. The answer to that is maybe.
Can you more specific?
All right. I'm working on it, George. Okay. I say maybe because, one, say you have a DNS server set up on your network that's V6, then it's your DNS server that's actually going out and querying the root server. If your internet provider happens to have a DNS server that listens on v6, then you can use your internet providers. You could use afraid.orgs. There's nothing saying that you have to use your ISPs or your own DNS server.
I think, just to clarify your answer maybe a little bit, are you saying that the name servers that become authoritative through the domain of the 6net can get their authoritative information from root servers that are in the IPv4 only internet, correct?
Well, there's
so that way you're basically saying that your DNS server has to be a dual host in order to basically work.
When you register the domain, you put in the IPv4 addresses for DNS.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So I mean, the thing is, IPv4 is not going away for a long time. It's just a matter, there's going to be a lot of dual stack hosts, and a lot of that is going to be in the DNS realm.
Got it.
Are there any estimates of counts and numbers of active hosts on IPv6, either in the U.S. or in the world? And if so, like, if you get on all these networks, it's still kind of like the really wild west days of the internet. So, are people locked down, things like that? Wild West, you know?
Okay, so the question is...
I find open relays that'll proxy all my spam.
It's about where's the porn for
how. Ah!
Yeah, I know him well.
Okay. There is... The question was, is how many current IPv6 host networks are there, and is it currently like the Wild Wild West? Honestly, I think, not that I was around for this, but I think the IPv6 side is more along the lines of when they were still doing research on the IPv4 internet. What's that?
Excellent.
Yeah. So yeah, it's
download the source of VI.
I think it's 6x actually. Although Hurricane's got a fairly decent pipe, one of the things that they're doing is blocking IRC.
Uh-huh.
Well, they had too many people that were going in over V6 tunnels and doing dumb stuff on IRC, so they ended up having to block it. Yeah, but they got enough gripes going back to Hurricane Electric to where Hurricane was like, we've had enough of this. Now, as far as the Wild Wild West side, there is I think the dude said he's got 54 gigs of porn. Free download, he's giving it away, but you can't connect to it unless you have a V6 connection. So he's doing his own part to try to further V6. But it's funny because the task force is like, we're not sure if we should be sanctioning this guy or not.
Well, the IPv4 network was strengthened by porn and V3, so why not?
That's I think that was this guy's reasoning.
Yeah.
It makes total sense to me.
Does DRM work over?
Unfortunately.
Not porn.
I'm not sure if they've done a V6 port of Tor yet or not. But the thing is, I mean,
you've gotten over the anonymity thing.
True. Yes.
If you just basically stand up and kind of motion in the air on how one would set up the following scenario, one wants to deploy a number of IPv6 clients,
okay,
so to speak, and then take care of those clients. He wants to set up his own little network of IPv6.
Okay.
So we're obviously going to need the DNS servers. We can take care of those, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We obviously have the clients. We can deploy those, right?
Okay. Yes.
So those, and we can DHCP to the clients, correct? With a IPv6 DHCP server.
Yes.
So we've got those three things taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I'm questioning is now I'm going to put IP6 traffic over the world.
Okay.
Can the world handle that IP6 traffic?
Yes, because it's all tunneled over V4 currently. Now, there's going to be a paradigm shift where eventually it's going to be the V4 traffic tunneled over the V6.
When does quality turn into quantity turn into quality? When does the quantity of IPv6 traffic change the quality of, instead of us tunneling? Is the question.
Oh, when do I see it?
It's a philosophical thing, quantity and quality.
Well, obviously, it's already happening in Japan.
Outside of America, Japan is all IPv6 happy, but...
China's working on it. Most of Europe is working on it. Some South American countries are working on it.
I hear real mixed things about Europe. I mean, I realize Italy is a bellwether of European technology, but... I mean, all the Frisbee and all the whole crew of Italians over there, I mean, they're like, yeah, cool, Switzerland.
It's country to country, because, like, the Swiss just got to, they get sick stuff up in, like, minutes. And they're like, big deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, one place to the next.
But Germany, I don't think anything's really going on.
No, right? nothing new. Germany.
They have a pretty good block by IPv4.
That's
one of the reasons why Stanford has more IPv4 space than China.
He's not kidding.
Sorry, I know that's the logic behind it, but when you look throughout Europe, it's so uneven from what you've had individual conversations
with. Is there an economic opportunity here to become an expert in IP6 or to offer these kind of services, or are we just more or less?
There's a company I was interviewing with in Washington, D.C. that's making a pretty good chunk of change off of it right now.
The NSA?
No, it's a company called Command Information, and of course I know most of the staff because they're all on the task force as well, but they said, why don't you come up to D.C., and I was like, no, I don't want to live in D.C.
You can't smoke the cars anymore. Though.
Yeah.
But that's a military company, right?
For the most part, they're dealing with the Department of Defense. But, I mean, there's a lot of opportunities, it seems, with training and with actually implementing some of these test networks. Because some of these things are, you know, multi-point, you know, thousands of workstations. And they have to go in, they have to set them up, they have to secure them. Because a lot of these are going to be test beds for CIPRNet, which is the secret network that is supposedly, you know, completely off of the regular internet. But CIPR as well as NIPRNet, and NIPR's the not secret network, I mean, both of those are going to have to switch over to V6 eventually. And they need to be able to test all that stuff before they do the full switch. So yes, there is money to be made. It's mostly through the Fed.
Now, in terms of documentation, do you have any recommendations on books that are printed, or is it really that you should go to the documentation that's on the net by people that are using it?
Okay, first of all, I have a biased opinion on this because I helped write it, but IPv6 Essentials, second edition. I wrote about half of the security... O'Reilly. I wrote about half the security section and about a third of the transitioning section, and I proofread the whole thing. So, but yeah, that's, you can go with that one. O'Reilly's got...
Can you bring us free copies to sign?
Copies for sale?
Because my name's not on the cover.
You're in the index.
Vain SOB.
No, it's not on the cover. It's just in the...
I know, exactly. If it was, we'd have them,
yeah. Yeah. But it's not, so I'm just in the thank yous, but...
Just to ask this a serious question, not that spam and porn wasn't serious, but as far as the MAC addresses go, so part of the routes are determined by the MAC address?
Unless you substitute another number.
No, not the route.
The IP address.
The IP address itself, like, you know, say it's using DHCP, all right, just in a standard V4 network. Well, when the client goes out and requests an IP address, any DHCP server worth its salt is going to log the MAC address with the IP address.
Right.
Okay. Well, this is kind of along the same lines where instead of the DHCP server having to log it, it just becomes part of the IP, but it's just for the client.
But it is scrambled. It's hashed, right?
No.
It's
the IP address.
So between the router and the host, part of its IP address, according to the router, is its MAC address?
Yes, unless you enable the privacy extensions.
But then how does it know what the IP address beyond that segment is? There's a public IP, and your MAC address is the local chunk of it.
Mm-hmm.
How does it know, across the world, what this guy's IP is? Is it still part of that? I mean, it can't be part of that MAC
address.
Yeah.
Well,
IP
is
a big unique number to stick in the private side of it. So the router is that propagated outside of your local segment?
No, it's like any other than
only if you're doing DNS with it.
Yeah.
You know, only that information is only public if you're making it public.
If I tell that to some IP, I don't know the guy's MAC address.
Right.
If IPv6,
you will know their MAC address unless...
Because it is broadcasted outside of the segment.
Yeah. Because it's part of your global IP.
That's why they put that privacy thing.
But that's why they did the privacy extensions.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's why
they
have welcome to New York.
Get involved.
Well,
so what does that mean for a MAC address?
Then
why do you even want a MAC address
for layer 2? So layer 1 and layer 2 still work?
So just push it down from your IP address. I mean, everybody spoofs MAC addresses for various reasons. Why not just make it part of your IP address?
Isn't that what it's doing?
Well, okay, but I guess the question is, I mean, the NIC has the thing burned onto it, or supposedly MAC address part of it.
Okay.
Which is set in the hardware, so to speak.
Right, right.
So why not just set that dynamically to whatever your IP address is? So you're pushing it down versus reading what the MAC address is and forming part of your IP address.
So you're cloning like the router.
Are you saying that the router advertiser should shut down the entire IP instead of just the first half of it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't maybe quite get the whole thing, but it seems like if you have a separation of layers, then fine, but now we don't have a separation of layers, so why do we need two addresses?
Well, because we've got 7 layers in the OSI model.
Actually, there's 9. But
yeah.
You weren't in our...
Yeah, I forgot politics.
Electricity.
PEPCAC.
Figure it out later. A follow-up question. Would you recommend... I mean, so I assume that the privacy extension are just added because people are really paranoid, but I mean, is it really like a disadvantage to like not using it? Besides the fact that like you can look up and see like, oh, he has a D-Link network card, is there really any...
I personally have never used the privacy extensions. I mean, it doesn't matter to me if they happen to know the NIC or the MAC of my NIC, so what? But, you know, I can see where there'd be areas where you wouldn't want your MAC known. So at that point, you turn them on and it randomizes it.
That IP you get,
I see you.
When you boot up the machine, it's like FE something.
FE80,
and then something MAC address. What do you do with it?
I mean,
it's unique, clearly it's unique because it's got your MAC address on it. But what's the FE80?
That FE80
is basically when you don't have the router, you just have a network.
That's
what's connected together.
That's the first part. It's when you don't have, it's one, with the FE80s, you can actually do it ad hoc network. Two, it's actually using that address as opposed to using ARP to go out and find an IPv6 router or a DHCP server.
So it's a return address on the multicast bank.
At which point, because it's a routable.
Right. IP. Right. It's using that FE80 as a stepping stone.
Okay. Okay.
Two questions. Is any, like, eager
loud,
to
get loud.
I know you're eager to get on with the demo stuff.
There's only two slides left.
Oh, okay. first question is to do with laptops. All right, so say you've got a laptop. It's got a, you know, a static IPv6 address.
Okay.
Packets route from all around the world, and you're doing everything right, and filtering packets and firewall, I mean, the laptop becomes the perimeter,
right?
Say your name. Doing everything right, great. You go somewhere else in the world. Your IP address. What do we do about this? How do you make it? Like, are there realistic strategies in place for you to be able to keep your IP address?
Yes, there are.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I haven't done a whole lot of research on this particular side of it.
Is that the Shisha stuff?
That's the mobile IPv6.
Got it.
As I said, the main research that I've been looking at is how they're actually tying it into cell phones.
Got it.
But the question was, if you have a laptop, can you keep a static IPv6 IP? The answer is yes. There's quite a few RFCs out on it. It's mobile IPv6, and essentially what it does is it uses that hierarchical routing to find its way back to its original router. So you can actually keep your same IP, you stay on the same network, it's just you're kind of taking a few hops in between.
Is there a definition of speed or anything?
Oh, I'm sure there is. Add a few more hops, you know.
Logically, yeah. I mean, I just didn't know in the context whether it was accounted for.
So this could lead to strategies for, like, say you know, data center has some critical failure, like catches on fire or something. Everybody's moving their boxes out. You know, is it conceivable you could have a, you know, toss them in a truck with a little satellite uplink or a,
oh, yeah,
you know, or a freaking, you know, a little Sprint wireless card or some junk.
Yeah.
And just, you know, the servers continue to keep serving while you transport them to the next facility.
Like a mobile virtualization system?
Say what?
Like a mobile virtualization system?
Yeah.
A mobile BSD jail?
Yeah, you got it.
A mobile BSD jail?
Or actually, yeah, like running services from physically mobile, mobile units. This is a whole new cool idea. This works.
So you can actually develop, like, a redundant infrastructure around the world based on the same routers.
Yes.
In that way.
Yep.
But that's wasn't that feature disabled in OpenBSD, RH0 or something?
I'm not totally sure. Again, I'm not like the mobile V6 expert by any means. I mean, I...
Because a couple of months back or so, I didn't know, how did you find out about this? It was discovered that people could basically manipulate the routes and cause immense traffic between routers, and basically cause a DOS between two routers, any two routers that's running IPv6.
Okay.
So this became a big security hole. Obviously, so OpenBSD for one disabled that functionality. I'm not sure if that functionality is essential to the mobile IPv6 thing.
I'm not sure either, to be honest. I'm not. Again, I mean, I haven't. I've read about it. I've never really implemented it. One of these days, I'm going to, especially now that
you know. How kind of you now?
I don't know if it's going to be mobile V6.
What?
I don't know if it's got anything to do with mobile V6.
Yeah.
Say
for all of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Smart
source routing.
Yeah. If it's source routing, then that's it.
I don't know.
The one guy I want to meet is IDIGEN.
Yeah, who's there?
Yeah.
Okay, guys, one other separate side question.
He's also the V6 god.
Yeah.
And also this guy brought PF, the net, right? It's kind of everything.
Yeah. But this is a tangent question, or it's a separate question from the other one. Is it realistic at this point in time to actually, do we have the tools available at this point for Comac, you know, hobbyists? You're saying hobbyists, but we all live this hobby and make a living with it.
Right.
We love it, you know, figure out how to make it feed us. So yeah, it has business implications, all this long term. Is it realistic for all of the actors in this room who, you know, all have several machines sitting around, little silver spots in their apartments, and all kinds of fun gear and old gear and weird stuff, to actually start setting up an IPv6 only LAN that tunnels out four to the rest of the world? I mean, is that a practical reality with the tools that are available, stable, functioning now?
I mean,
and is that even the same approach? Or
The crew that I hang out with in Jacksonville, we actually have, there's six of us that have established either direct VPNs to one of the other persons or set up V6 tunnels, and we've actually got a virtual V6 LAN set up over the V4 internet.
Wow.
Is that a setup question? I'm just kidding, because Ike has been bringing this up forever, and Ike has actually been proposing that a number of us do this between our home networks.
Yeah.
Or call loads or business networks or whatever.
I'll have you handle it.
And we're also rude to each other anyways. We're going to have to figure out how to do all of our firewall and fax filtering, to get rid of George's
IDX6.
George's kids using his computer again. just one. But that's like some real, that's, not only does that sound fun, but that's like, real world practical, job worthy.
Yep. All
right, on that note, how would you propose, let's be operational at the meeting. How would you propose we actually start, if say like half the room or three quarters of the room wants to actually do something like that, what would you propose? Obviously, don't run Cisco 2600s with like iOS version 10.
Okay.
Okay, good. Version 10's out.
Right, I know. Okay.
I think you need 12 or better.
12, all right, I'm joking, but you know what I mean? We have to be...
Well, you have MYI.
Right.
Okay.
And they have IPv6 addresses.
They do.
So we do hub and spoke.
Yeah, but they can't
route it. That's actually what I was thinking.
Okay.
On top of that, I recommended they try to peer with Hurricane, but then you told me the Hurricane was trying to charge him for it. I might have been drunk too. Don't get me wrong. I mean, but what's Hurricane? And what?
I understood that this conversation was a non-issue. Am I wrong?
Well,
let me explain. I'm saying that, okay, I have three or four racks.
Right.
I give them to him. They become a DNS server. They become a DHCP server. And they become a file server.
Okay.
Now
you realize I can do this on one machine, right?
Fine. Okay. One you go to
jails in
IPv6. It becomes these servers.
Not possible.
We set up our laptops or our desktop machines to be IPv6.
Okay.
And we simply talk across the network. Where does Hurricane come in?
Hurricane is one of the only tunnel brokers in the United States. Now,
when you say tunnel broker, though,
they're tunneling IPv6 traffic over IPv4, which is the majority of the network as it stands.
Right.
That's pretty much the only way in the United States right now to get V6 connectivity out to the rest of the world.
So we would have to, apologize for interrupting, but does that mean that our servers get co-load at Hurricane, and then we as clients can have this?
Either you can go that route, or your clients connect to Hurricane, okay? Your server, wherever it is, connects to Hurricane. They all get V6 addresses from Hurricane over the V4 internet.
Tunneled over the V4.
Yeah.
It's sort of like VPNing.
I'm so confused. I thought I could simply use the existing electrical and fiber connections from point to point to send and receive IP6 packets.
No.
Yes. Yes, you can, but existing
infrastructure doesn't route. So the router's in the middle of the problem.
Yes.
Right. Okay, so if the IP6 packet goes out and it hits a bad router, is it going to route around to a good router?
Not at the moment. Not because...
It's not enough.
Exactly.
Okay. So the solution to this real quick is to colo at Hurricane.
Either colo at Hurricane or set up your own tunnel broker.
Right, or if we have in our, I mean,
that's where this conversation came back around.
Yes.
Yeah. Ocon's like four steps ahead of us on this. He's just not talking at this point.
No, I mean, okay. So in that scenario, okay, following up, you know, we have IPv6 DNS, right?
Right.
And a gateway, right? Even at, a remote gateway out of the colo and NYI, right? Tunnels, people tunnel in.
Right.
And then we could actually essentially be performing as the infrastructure for the IPv6 for anybody.
The only barrier is getting, right now is getting NYI to actually fix their equipment so we can actually, they can actually route
Is it something we can fix for them?
No, apparently their equipment does not have the capability to run the code that's the minimum code refs to run IPv6. So not only is it an OS upgrade for them, it's a hardware upgrade for them.
I got a screwdriver on me.
But yes, in that scenario, that's exactly what you become. You become a SixNet exact at that point. You basically become a tunnel broker. You know, you set up, you have your connection, you can give away PIs if you want, and you can start allowing people to tunnel to you and based on whatever you want to... Power main address that you want to slash 48.
What are the potential problems if we, as Nicebug in the cabinet, did that? Are we going to get like DDoS, like by like really long addresses? I mean,
probably not.
I don't think that's.
Real tech? All right. Bad joke. Sorry.
No, this is correct.
No, basically
layer zero.
If okay. First of all, the supposed conversation that I guess we didn't have about not being able to peer with Hurricane Electric.
Yeah. I
actually came up with a solution for that, and if somebody at NYI actually wants to do the peering, the BGP peering, I've got a contact at 6X, the guy that actually runs it, and I'm sure he would be more than happy to have a New York City peering, because he had one, and my tunnel ping times were less than 10 milliseconds. And that was going through the V4 infrastructure in the first hop. So I was ecstatic about that, but it went away. It just fell offline one day and never came back.
Who was there?
I would have to do a lot of digging. This was 3 or 4 years ago. But they vanished, never came back, and now I got to go back through Hurricane, and the first hop is 200 milliseconds.
Now, along that conversation that you're having, that still means that it's not a matter of sticking a box in on the network. It's a matter of having a backbone connection that has the right routers from point A to point B. Or tunnel. Or set up
like a VPN type here.
Yeah.
The provider in Miami would have the start of the tunnel to encrypt the IP6 and IP4.
Okay. Server and client. The client connect to the server.
Many IP4 clients, IP6 clients would be connecting to the IP6
server.
Slash.
First, they would basically VPN those and have your IP3 port interface on card that actually works, wrap everything up, put a bubble on it, ship it out over IPv4. At the other end, it unwraps everything.
IPv6,
I'm happy.
Okay, so I need to get to this to wrap up, so I'm already into question. That's all.
Like, okay, so we really have a couple scenarios. If a provider isn't providing, getting us into IPv6 backbone, right?